Welcome to Tales from the Bridge. In this episode, we talk a lot about different books. So the book of the month is Beggars in Spain by Nancy Kress, so we definitely do a deep dive into that book itself. But we talk a lot about what we're reading, so we all throw out some new titles, hopefully some good recommendations for yourself. All right, we're starting things off with Kevin, Science Fact. Be sure to stick around to the end to find out what we're reading next. Let's make our way over to the bridge.
So I got an interesting science fiction science fact for you guys, and it's kind of related to a movie. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this movie. It's called The Matrix. You ever see that one?
Never heard of it.
No.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Little known 1999 film.
Too many good movies in 1999.
Right.
I missed that one.
Premise of the movie, for those who haven't seen it, the two of you, is, you know, people are in a simulation. Turns out that the real world isn't real. And in fact, there's all sorts of other things that are going on. But the key thing is that people are in a simulation and they can get out of the simulation. There's a way for them to escape the simulation. And have you guys heard of, you guys know about the simulation hypothesis, this thought that there's a possibility that we live in a simulation?
Yeah, it's getting more and more popular all the time.
It seems that way.
That and parallel universes, that bullshit like that.
It just seems truthy. It seems like, oh, that could very well be. Yeah. We all play in our little 3D virtual worlds on computers and, you know.
Well, it makes for great TV and movies.
Well, and then there's these big names like Elon Musk, who says that there's a 1 in a billion chance that we're not in a simulation. But then that man is kind of into hyperbole and excess.
Really? He said that?
Yeah, that's what he says.
1 in a billion chance.
1 in a billion chance that we're not. And I think the rationale is that if there is a species that's able to simulate universes, they're just going to go nuts and they're going to do it for everything. You know, like if they have an ant problem in the front yard, let's model a universe and let's tweak the parameters and see if there's a way that we can make these ants not be a problem. And then they, you know, it's just, so that, I think that's the rationale. But there are other minds out there like, Neil deGrasse Tyson. He puts it at 50% that we're probably in a simulation. And
that's still pretty good.
Yeah, it's still pretty good.
I feel like that's pretty high.
I don't know. I mean, these are smarty pants who seem to think that we're in a simulation. Nick Bostrom and David Kipping, they put it between 20% and 50% that we're in a simulation.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know what to say about this, but let's say that this is actually something we're thinking about. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, looking back at The Matrix, how the hell do we get out of it? And, I mean, this is perfect science fiction stuff, I think. And obviously, this is the premise of The Matrix and other things. There's actually a scientific article by a gentleman by the name of Roman Yampolsky.
Excellent. I love it.
Yeah.
That there is a Polish guy.
Just published. To be clear, I'm not sure if it's peer-reviewed, but he cites a lot of peer-reviewed articles, and it's called Can We Hack Our Way Out of the Universe? And the premise of this paper is what are our escape options to get out of a simulation if we're actually in the simulation? Mm. And so when I heard about this, I thought, whoa, that is fairly seriously sci-fi, science fiction, science fact.
100%, yeah. And so what I got to know, like what, well, what does he propose for the escape routes? But also makes me wonder, do we want to?
Oh, I 100% agree. Like if I were in the Matrix and I knew what lived out there, I would not be taking the blue pill. I think I would be
the red pill.
I'd be not taking the red pill.
Yeah,
I'd be
but
blue
if we're
guy.
If we're talking about the Matrix, if you get out of the Matrix and you're in the real world, what happens when you die there? You are just dead again.
Yeah.
Or
well, here's what I
dead
also
for the first time.
I mean, the more realistic reading is that they're like simulated beings are not of the same order of reality as the reality they're simulated in. It's like fundamentally a different kind of thing. In the Matrix, it makes it seem like you can be a genuine human being
when you're
in
out.
The simulation, and then when you're out too. Yeah. No, when you're out, you go into this higher dimensional space, just like a computer program. If it was somehow able to get out into our world, it would not be the same.
It would be different.
Order of being, right?
Probably not humans.
Yeah. And, so that's the thing about the simulation hypothesis. I think it's a great metaphor for just an old story mm-hmm. about there being a spiritual realm, an afterlife, a place where your soul is software, and if you can imagine that your software can move to different kinds of hardware, maybe, you know, like, people have always sort of thought that there were, like, different realms of being.
Just another way of saying that.
Yeah, another way of saying that.
It's true.
Except, but interesting because it has more levels. Right, like it's the whole simulation mm-hmm. within a simulator. Like if we're simulated, then how do you know that that simulation isn't coming from a place that's simulated? And there's this like bottomless mm-hmm. turtles all the way down story with the whole simulation hypothesis.
Why do I feel like Marty is just starting his own next cult, right? Like the next religion, Marty, is just got started. Born now.
Dude,
just,
I've been doing this for years.
It's already there.
You are basement. A founding member.
Yeah, we're all going to be in tracksuits soon, matching tracksuits with matching shoes.
Are we messiahs now?
Well,
no? Okay.
Maybe we're simulated messiahs.
I'm not surprised. I've been waiting for this moment.
We are pretty awesome.
That is true.
All things considered.
Well, Roman, in his paper, says the reason why we would want to get to this base reality is so that we could pursue more fundamental science and know more about actual reality than we ever could inside of a simulation, which seems pretty ideological and idealistic, but I can kind of get that. But do you want to hear his escape options?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yes. Okay, so his number one, and these to me sound like he's got some computer science background, but his first one is social engineering. So we trick the simulators, the people who are simulating our universe, into allowing us to get out. Which there's tons of assumptions there. One is that you're able to communicate with the simulators, and two, that they're actually going to listen to you and that you're able to outsmart them, which is, there's some very large assumptions. Mm-hmm. And another one is you hack your way out. And so he says, just like if you're playing Mario Brothers and you know that if you go with Yoshi in this one location and you hit Y four times and this thing, you start to see hexadecimal characters on a screen. And at that point, you can do weird stuff. So he says, we have to find the glitch in the Matrix. He's basically saying, looking for that black cat that goes by a couple times. And when that occurs, that's the opportunity to insert your malware and hack reality, which is a little bit out there. But
mm-hmm. yeah, but malware implies like if we're simulations and I was capable of making malware, I would be capable of like reality defying wizardry. I could like, create a person and out of thin air and like make energy free and like things that don't happen.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this mm-hmm. whole idea of like hacking, like, oh yeah, well if we made ourselves omniscient, powerful beings who could bend our reality, then okay.
We would have to know a lot of stuff to be able to make that happen.
And just talking about this, have we not just given the people running the beings running the simulation?
He has a solution to that.
Tip.
He has a solution
okay,
to that.
Okay, let's hear it.
He says that the security problem to stop the simulators from knowing that we're plotting against them is quantum encryption, which seems like a little bit of a overstatement.
So we outsmart them?
I don't know. Anyway, that was his solution to that.
Hold on, that does raise the issue, right? Like, if we're trying to hack our way out of the solution, if we had like a computer program that started like mouthing off to us and doing weird shit, what would you do?
Yeah,
you would wipe that program and you'd turn off your computer. Trying to, if that's the case, hack our way out is like asking for the universe to be ended.
Yeah,
yeah, but if you were a farmer and you had a goat that jumped out. That figured out how to get out, you put them back in, they kept getting out in different ways, you wouldn't kill the goat, would you?
It depends on how evil you are, I guess.
You have to be a pretty special kind of person.
And how annoying that goat is.
Most farmers would kill that goat.
How much
they would sell that goat. That could be even worse. They'd like,
he can get out of anywhere.
I have an infinite source of goats in my computer. They will manifest into physical reality, and I would sell them for $20.
Screw those goats. We'll just slaughter them.
So how much is Apple charging for the Quantum app?
Oh, I don't know.
That I need to download to break out of this joint.
A few hundred thousand.
Yeah, imagine. So did they give any background on the quantum piece there?
No.
It was
like a one-liner. It was a hand-wavy type thing.
Right, yeah.
We'll just use quantum encryption. And, of course, he's not saying that these are great options. He's just saying that these are possible thinking exercises.
Sure, yeah. And then he's interesting. He's suggesting something interesting, the reality itself, right? The mm-hmm. playing out of particles under the fundamental laws of physics are doing this in some maybe encrypted way. Like, I think that's why it's not that we are a simulation, but it's an interesting metaphor for thinking about the physical world. What if the physical world is like a simulation, right? There are computational acts being performed by particles, by their interaction, right? We could frame the laws of physics as if it was an algorithm happening, you know, to execute a simulation.
And that's also reasonable. But, I mean, I think these guys are literalists around this, and they're actually saying, no, there is a very real possibility that there is a simulator, and this is, we're living in this simulation, and these are the assumptions that, that they're making. And, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that is a stretch.
Yeah. Well, it's as much of a stretch as believing in God. Like, it's super weird. This is like a refuge for highly sciencey people to be, like, hardcore monotheists or polytheists or whatever. But they clearly, like, believe in a God more silly even than the guy in the sky that most scientists would like, you know, like, oh, ha, ha, some guy said create the stuff and it happened. He makes miracles. That's stupid. Well, but I'll believe that, like, it's even worse. It's some teenager who's, like, fucking around with all of reality at their whim. Like,
man. Well, if you want to hear more about belief in God, one of his solutions was that we enable superintelligence to help us to get out. And so this is that thing where you say, we'll just create a superintelligence who's smarter than us, and then it'll be able to figure it out. You know, and then we can pray to the superintelligence, and it can solve our problems for us. And, of course, that opens its a whole other realm of potential problems with having super artificial general intelligence. But anyway, that's an aside. And he had a few more. But I thought it was an interesting paper. If anybody's interested in it, Roman Yampolsky, December 20, 2022 is when it was published, and it's called Can We Hack Our Way Out of the Universe?
Very cool.
Well, I would be remiss if I did not mention that I just finished listening to a book about the simulation hypothesis, like a literary style science fiction book, not like a science book, and it's by Emily St. John Mandel, who, you may know, wrote Station 11, which was made into a TV show last year, and like she basically wrote a pandemic novel
that was
just before the pandemic.
That was
happened.
A Canada Reads book, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah. It was huge. It was big everywhere
on CBC.
It's a bestseller, and well, you know, I don't know who made it, but like a very good streaming company or whatever made it into a great TV series. In fact, I like the TV show. One of the first I can say this about, better than the book. Like the book was a little too literary for me. It was like definitely like, you know, has elements of like well, it's about after the apocalypse. So that's the only thing that made it a science fiction novel. But it was like a very human story about like a traveling troupe of like actors after the apocalypse, And I didn't really get it. And then I watched the movie, the TV show, and I was like, oh, now I understand everything I missed from the novel. Anyway, so she wrote a second novel right after this, incredible success, called Sea of Tranquility. And it's like a 5-hour audiobook, so it's a pretty short book. I listened to it while like working out. 4 times and just finished it today, and it's a time travel story, and it's like this whole meta story, because it's clearly about like it's about an author in the future who is on a book tour about a book that she wrote about a pandemic as the pandemic happened, and having pandemic conversations with people, and also it's a time travel story with like, anyway, it's like really really meta, really self-referential, and a great time travel story like that. You know, they've always got a good like finish at the end. So anyway, Sea of Tranquility. Sounds Emily St. John Mandel, author of Station 11.
Interesting.
Really good.
Sounds good. Well, I've been doing a little reading too, honestly. I've been over the last month, in addition to the book that we have read for this month, I also read Children of Memory by Adrian Tchaikovsky, the last in the series.
Yeah.
Children of Time.
Amazing.
And I thought that was great. You read that too.
I just finished it.
Really great ending.
Did you guys read it?
No, not yet.
You read it?
No.
Okay. Did you guys read Children of Ruin?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Have you read Children of Time?
Yes.
Oh, we were about to have to throw you off the show.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, that's the only one I've read.
Well, let's talk about that, Kevin. Well, I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
It was a hard book for me.
Yeah. It was a totally like, different style.
Very different. Like, I'd say I got like more than halfway. And considered not finishing it. I was like, this is a little too weird. Like, it's not adding up for me. I'm a little lost. I know I'm supposed to be confused, but I'm more confused than I want to be.
Well, when he was on the show, he was talking about writing more fantasy. and wanting to do more
things.
It was fantastical. Yeah, I think that's a way to look at it. Whereas the first one wasn't. Like, there was a bit, it was a bit harder, right? It was.
Both the first and the second one, I'd say, are like straight up hard sci-fi, like very biological, species evolution and all that. And this one was like, well, you were in a simulation. I'm sorry to give it away. Oh, shit. Were they? Well, I guess that. Anyway, whatever, man. We can't keep everything under wraps.
Are you kidding me?
But it's not like you think it is and it isn't. And, oh, yeah, no, I blew it. But since we're talking about simulations.
I got to cut this out of the show now.
Now you're going to have to read the book. No, some of them, I'm not saying all of it. Okay, now you have to read the book to understand which parts and how is in a simulation, which isn't. And it's super, it gets pretty like.
Simulations are involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gets kind of. It seems magical and it's chaotic, right? And more like a fantasy book.
But it resolves.
But it resolves, and it resolves in a pretty cool way. Like, I was, like, tired of it. I was almost ready to give it up. Even when it resolved, I was like, is this going to be good enough to, like, justify
and
having
it did.
Dread?
It
and
was.
I was like, yeah, yeah, I think
it
did. It was like,
well, that's the main thing, though. With a trilogy especially, you need to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You've got to walk away from a trilogy saying, okay, well, that was worth the two before in this one.
Although each one is really pretty independent, I suppose. I mean, the second one sort of follows from the first. The third one you could read without reading any of the rest, really. It's like, wouldn't you agree? It's like kind of just
you could read
its own crazy story.
Absolutely. It was related. Like, obviously, it was in the universe, and it had not characters, but
species
that related to the other ones. But I mean, I recommend it. I still recommend it personally.
Yeah.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. But it is a marked different book from the other ones.
So that's Adrian Tchaikovsky, by the way.
Children,
Children of Time, then was our favorite book, and it was followed by Children of Ruin, and then Children of Memory came out last year, and we talked to Adrian Tchaikovsky a couple months ago as it came out. Wasn't it the day it came out?
In
Canada.
In November.
Strangely.
It was a weird issue with the release dates. I read a couple books recently. One is, I read Orcs and Crake.
Oh, wow. Good for you. I just got a copy of that.
Did
I've
you?
Read it, but I didn't know it.
I really liked it. It was really good. Cool. I think, but I read that after Nancy Kress, after this book that we're talking about today. Because there is something that is like literary fiction, science fiction with Nancy Kress, right? There's something, it's 90s also, which Margaret Atwood reminds me of the 90s, because I read most of, or the two books that I've read, I should say, were both in the 90s or from the 90s. But yeah, Orcs and Crake is fantastic. It's less eventful than I thought, but I thought it was beautiful. It's very dark too. There was even early on, you guys have read this book?
I've read it.
Really
a
long time ago.
It's got some stuff that I was really questioning whether I wanted to go into a world this dark.
But that's Margaret Atwood.
It is. And I mean, there's a whole conversation with, is this literary fiction or speculative fiction or science fiction that we don't really need to get into right now. However, it's science fiction to me. It really was. It's the future.
Orcs and Crake is as sci-fi as it gets. I mean,
but it's
a dystopian genetic, you know, apocalypse.
But I think she says that because all the things in the book could happen today, I guess, or the technology exists today, that's why it wouldn't be science fiction. Which is like I'm not a microbiologist, so I don't know. But I do want to mention another book that I did read that I absolutely loved. And honestly, like, I was kind of blown away by this. And I think you guys have read this, but The Three Body Problem.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I loved it.
You liked that?
Oh, my goodness. I just finished it. And I look forward to reading more. It was great. It had my brain spinning, the ideas in it, and the game, the characters. I mean, it's not huge. You don't really love that. I mean, it doesn't go too deep into the characters except for telling you what they did and what they followed, what happens to them after certain situations. But the whole Tricelarians. That's great. They're coming. Like, that's awesome. I love that. And I love the time and what they think of humans and what we think of them, and how humans are relating to how we're dealing with knowing someone's coming
yeah.
and how some people are for it and some people are against. And I think it's a big question that we all ask ourselves, like, are you on human side or are you on the alien side?
Oh, yeah.
And that's a great question to ask. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I just loved it. And I think I'm on the alien side.
You're a collaborator.
Yeah.
You would be murdered by your own kind for betraying probably. Them. Yeah, it's pretty
well,
terrible.
I don't know. I just
depends
I feel
who the aliens are, isn't it?
Well, with
wouldn't
the Trisolarians,
you have to meet them first? You'd be like, are you guys evil or good?
That's the thing. You still don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you ask me, humans are pretty gosh darn evil. So, like, if you were to show me footage of other aliens doing what we do to our own kind, I would be like, they're horrible. I don't really.
Sure.
Agree with that. So.
Especially if they had human morality, then they would agree with us.
Yeah,
but that's
one of the questions that asked too. That I love the question of if you're technologically more advanced, are you not morally more advanced? Do you not have better ethics? So that's yet to be seen with the story completely. But I look forward to going deeper. But I love that book.
Cool. Great.
And there's a TV.
There's
series.
A TV series. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's. I read it a few years ago, and now that the series has come out or coming out, it sort of sparked my interest to read it again. So if it were to show up as a pick for this podcast, I wouldn't be against it for sure. But
I read it a long time ago, and I don't remember too much about it. But I remember thinking that it was quite out there, and and I remember some Chinese propaganda.
Yeah,
and I remember the interesting. Evolution process on their planet where they would have to hibernate for periods of time.
Right, right, yeah.
And then try to rebuild their society.
Cool. Yeah, when certain things happened, like the stars moving, the three stars moving, they knew they were in for dehydration.
Right.
And years of chaos.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat that we don't have that here, but we do have events that throw us off.
Yeah.
But
not so regularly.
And predictably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember the computation by the statue army or something, right? People had to like shuffle back and forth
with
and like
the flags.
Imitate a, yeah, and that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever read in my life. I was just like, oh,
I
okay,
thought that was
I'm
cool.
Getting off the train.
I thought that was here. This is physical computer logic gates by people. That
but
was
why people? That's just it's just so bizarre. I mean, but it's very creative. I really dug it. That was like, okay, this is super weird. All of it I found weird, and I liked that it was Chinese, like culturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It felt like. It was coming from somewhere else. I liked all the stuff about the, you know, the past, the Cultural Revolution and you know, at the beginning. That was all really cool. But what I've learned anyway, I was like, people like this? When I finished it, I was like, I'm done, man. I'm not reading another one of these.
Really?
But I found it's an incredibly bifurcated opinion book, right? There are just people that really like it, and there's people that really hate it. And, like, smart people that like the kind of books that I like on both sides. It's, like, really kind of surprising if you look at the... just on like the science fiction podcast and the web
well, our
and
friend
the Facebook group.
What triggered me actually was Jim Al-Khalili talked to
Liu,
and had a good talk, and that was great. And I was
cool,
like, I'm diving in, I'm going for this.
Well, I got the rest of them if you want to borrow it. Oh, you're only listening.
I have them as well.
Okay, good.
I find it interesting that there was this sort of Chinese propaganda piece, and wonder
that's important.
I mean, you look at even like Hollywood movies now, sort of catering to the Chinese government and I have to wonder how much of it was required of the author, right? And how much
or how much exploited by the author, right?
Yeah,
but it's weird. It's not like the author was doing anything really explicit that I could see. Like they certainly wasn't pandering. It was a weird ass book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That happened to be really successful, and it was like it was just, you know, you got to pick a winner, right? It's like their Dan Brown or something, right? It was like a really successful, big international, award winning. The government got behind it, not because I mean it had some good.
Well, but that's the thing is like
content, right?
If
Chinese content.
But what's happening behind the scenes there? If I'm an author in China and I want to get sort of global attention, do I have to pander? Or am I required to? What's what's that exchange there? Because I feel like some of it was pretty naked. Propaganda. So
it was okay.
Yeah.
You know,
so I do feel like there's some sort of exchange there. I do feel like there's a transactional, a creative transactional something that's happening there. That's what it feels like. Yeah. I have nothing to assign that to other than Beijing, right? I kind of found that though just as interesting an aspect of the story. Like it's sort of a cultural peek behind an iron curtain, right? Like where you get
I felt that way too, actually.
And so it's socially interesting,
right? Right.
You know, or sociologically interesting, and in cool. that aspect. So there, to me, there was that extra layer made it kind of fascinating, right? It's sort of that's what kept me hooked on it, in a way. But anyway, one of the hooks for me.
Cool.
On
that book.
I think it's worth just mentioning the translator as well, Ken Liu.
Right.
And something I just discovered is he has written an epic fantasy series called The Dandelion Dynasty, which is described as silk punk.
Oh, interesting.
And now I'm intrigued.
Like Silk Road punk? Is that it? It's like Chinese punk?
I don't know. We'll
yeah,
find
he's
out
written
soon.
Some short stories that I've seen. Yeah, he's been striking out on his own as a sci-fi guy. Or maybe he already was an author before.
Well, there's
he was doing
a lot of credit would have to go to the translation of a
but the translator
book like
got
this.
Changed between either book one and two or two and three. Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody was dropped. I think he actually, if he did the first translate, yeah, he was dropped. Somebody else was put on it. I'm pretty sure that's true. I might want to check, but I don't want to put that on the air and get in trouble with the Chinese government.
We're already in trouble with the simulators, and now we're in Beijing. It's all coming down.
Have you read anything lately, Sam?
Yeah, I have. I'm actually just finishing up Light Years from Home by Mike Chen. And this is, it's got a sort of X-Files feel to it. It's got a alien abduction, and what you get is the impact on the family left behind, and almost too much. There's lots of feelings, lots of therapy going on with this family. But the thing is that the father and brother are abducted, and the father comes back and with this incredible story, and no one really believes him, and so the family splinters as a result. And the thing is, they really were kidnapped, and this their brother who's still there is now a intergalactic soldier fighting for the fate of the galaxy. And it's just sort of
sounds good.
It's kind of like that of side this. Of the story is awesome.
Cool.
But it's got this it's like X-Files, that sort of UFO story arc on X-Files, but taken seriously. And let's play this out like the family tragedy that it would be. And now the brother comes back as part of a mission and has to reestablish with the family. And they have to help him, save the planet, if not the galaxy. And it's sort of, and you say it out loud, and it sounds totally hokey, but you read it, and it kind of
works. Hokey's
good. Yeah,
what's it called
again? A sci-fi show.
Tell me the title.
This is Light Years from Home.
Light Years from Home. Cool.
And the author is Mike Chen, and I'm kind of getting a kick out of it. It doesn't have a huge score on Goodreads or anything like that. It kind of flew under the radar, but I just something about it hooked me, and so that's what I've been reading, and I would recommend it, but with the caveat is that, you're gonna get a little therapy out of this situation. So,
well, I've seen his books on the shelves, and I've almost picked something up, and just kind of haven't yet, and he's been on my radar, but give it a go soon.
Can I make one more quick recommendation?
Yeah, of course. For sure.
So Tristan and I presented a session at Comic-Con in Toronto a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned these books. They're novellas, and one of them, the second one, was a Hugo Award winner by Becky Chambers. It's the robot, the monk and robot duology is what she calls it. So it's about a monk and a robot. And it sounds cheesy, of course, but they become friends. And they through two books. The first one's called A Psalm for the Wild Built, Psalm starting with a P, like biblically. And the second book is called Prayer for the Crown Shy. That's the one that won the Hugo for Best Novella in 2022. And it is one of these ones that if you're looking for a very serious plot, like crisis, rising activation crisis, and denouement and all that, you're not going to get it. This is just a nice kind of pokey exploration of this universe, and I found it really enjoyable as a journey, not the end point.
Becky Chambers does a really good job of that, though.
Yeah.
I really like her books, and that she does. She's happy to not, like, the stakes don't always have to be the end of the world.
The
right?
stakes
like,
are pretty low in this generally. Yeah, but you know what it is? Is it exists in this world? Somebody calls it solar punk, where society has kind of reached an equilibrium with our ecosystem, and you know, everybody's kind of trying to be very thoughtful about the world around them. You know, it's just kind of a nice read. It makes people feel good. And I enjoyed it, so I recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm definitely going to check that one. Mm-hmm.
And they're two novellas, very quick reads.
Nice.
Well, we read A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, right? That was one of our things. Mm-hmm. And then I did read the sequel, A Close and Common Loop. I don't know if you read that.
Mm-hmm.
Orbit. Yeah, Close and Common Orbit. And it was quite good. And mm-hmm. some people I know that have read it like it better than the first. And I have the third, The Galaxy Something Born. You read that.
I read all three, and I can't remember the either. I'll have to Google it. But I liked all three of her books. If I see a Becky Chamber book, I will happily pick it up. And it's like I said, not you're not fighting for the fate of the universe, and that's kind of okay. Like, it's okay to have a sort of and I think Ted Lasso sort of popularized that
idea. I was about to mention this. That's, it feels like this, everyone does okay, people get better, they grow as people, the friendships are developed really well. Yeah. The bad guys aren't even that bad usually. I mean, there's some stuff, but
yeah,
overall it's positive, it's hopeful. I was about to say Ted Lasso.
Yeah,
what
it is right
about,
but,
man?
But it still serves as a great vehicle for certain philosophies, right? Or certain ways of thinking, certain ways of living, and that's enough. Like, that kind of works, man.
That is so weird. I was about to relate it to Ted Lasso.
You guys are so in sync.
I didn't even know you watched Ted Lasso.
Yeah, well, this is what happens when we get together and do this in person. And for those of you listening, this is actually our very first episode out of how many episodes now?
70
episodes. Wow. We've never done this in person. This is our first time.
We are gathered around a table with four microphones before us.
To be clear, we have met each other before.
Yes.
Yeah.
We just have not done a podcast
recording
for
it. Yeah. No, we go out all the time. We're going to go get some drinks tonight. But we do go out. We meet. We play pinball. We hang out.
One day we'll bring a microphone with us.
This is the first time with mics.
The new sci-fi tech will be like that floating orb that just like follows you around. Mm-hmm. And it'll just record everything you want. And then you can look at it the next day and edit it.
That's when TikTok gets real good.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we're already there. Okay, well, that's good. Let's move on to my last recommendation. It's been a while since we've had a book episode. We read Beggars in Spain by Nancy Kress. Yeah.
I am going to use the washroom, though. But it's
sure. Like, we can pause right here and
no,
get
no,
beer.
No, you keep going.
Yeah, do your intro.
I can't mute it. That's the thing. We can't mute our own like we do when we're at
home. Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. Real life, man.
Oh.
That's what people are paying for. So we read Beggars in Spain by Nancy Kress. It was a novella that she won the Hugo and possibly the Nebula as well. I think Hugo Nebula. It won her both of them for this in 1991, her most successful short story or novella. And then she turned it into a novel called Beggars in Spain. And actually there was a second and third volume called Beggar's Ride and Choosers and Beggars? Beggars and Choosers? Beggars and Choosers. So I just loved all of them. They sort of hooked me, and I like her other writing. I've read her novellas. I've read short stories by her. She keeps showing up in almost every best sci-fi of the year collection that I happen to own, by Gardner Doises. Nobody knows how to pronounce his name. So that's it. I guess we should talk about it. All right, what do you think, Kevin?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent, and I can see certainly how the first part of the book, which is the original novella, won both the Hugo and the Nebula, and it did. It won both. For those who haven't read it, it's a great one about how gene therapy can make society be bifurcated. We've got the sleepers and the sleepless, the people who have been modified to not need sleep, and as a byproduct of that, they also don't age, right
they're healthier,
and so what does that mean for society? And I thought that exploration was pretty cool. And of course what happens is society becomes paranoid about the sleepless, and it leads to all these different things. And the protagonist, I think Leisha is the protagonist. Mm. She's very empathetic, and she, doesn't internalize the fact that a lot of people hate her for being sleepless, right? And but or that they do hate her, but she still has empathy for the sleepless, or the sleepers, sorry. And then it starts to shift, right? Then there's the book two, which goes out of the original novella, and then it moves into book three up in space, and the book progresses in kind of weird different ways. I liked the twists and turns. Like, it was clearly different books, but I liked that. I mean, those are things that I really enjoy. I did not go and read the next one, and so that tells me something, that it didn't get me enough to want to continue on. But it's certainly a book I would recommend, because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like you said too, I was on the third book by the time I recommended this, so this is all a little while ago. But the twists and turns, like the fact that it's three different books packed into one book,
right?
I really did enjoy that too. Yeah. Like, he was like, oh, you're on to the next part. There's a whole new character. And, oh, that guy's gone, and we're on to the next generation. And like,
time moves sort of forward.
Like, it's a plot that moves, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like she's milking it. Like, she's like, okay, there's like almost three different times of and generations and everything that are thrown in here. And yeah, it moves along at a good clip.
It does. And I like that generational movement. Like, see, or not, whatever the period of time is between. When I know that something has moved along in the storyline, I'm excited. Oh, I want to know what happened, right? I want to see what happened with society, and so that was kind of nice to see that. It's like the books where we see generational ships, mm-hmm. where they go to the next generation,
right.
And
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I thought that was good. So.
Cool.
Yeah, so I didn't finish the whole thing because
all right, I didn't come out of the corner with your dunce cap now, Sam.
I guess so.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's. I think for me, it felt like a short story that was really successful and then forced into a long one.
Yeah,
and maybe me knowing that colored my impression of it. I listened to it as an audiobook on my commute to work, and the first book I thought was great. I thought it was, I kind of feel like I accomplished everything that it needed to in that first book. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need more of that world. And then it goes into part two, which is essentially a court case, and that's where it lost me. And I understand that I'm missing out on the third book, and it's pretty spectacular, but I kind of had all my curiosity quenched in that first part. I think if I have to go to court, I'm just, you know, I work in an administrative role and I do that already. So for me, my big thing is I want that, you know, sci-fi for me is this escape from work, and the courtroom doesn't really give me that escape, right? It's not good. And it's the arguments were interesting to a point, but then I just felt like it was stalling. And so for me, I'm going to check out the third book, and I almost wonder if the middle piece is necessary. I don't know. So that's sort of where I landed, but I kind of felt like I got everything I needed out of that first book. The first part is great,
yeah.
And I thought it was a really interesting idea. What would a two-tiered humanity look like, essentially, where you've got the sleepless who are brilliant and can advance themselves faster and better and accomplish more things and essentially take over the world in a certain way, right? And be better and sort of subjugate the rest of the world if they wanted to, and what that tension would look like. And that, I feel like, got covered in that first piece. So I think the short story was amazing and really interesting and intriguing. And it just didn't stretch out for me. So it didn't naturally move into a trilogy or into or grow as a world. And in that second book, and in fact, I think if it had in a more meaningful way, I would have hung in for it. But if you lose me on an audiobook, you've lost me at my most basic level, right? Like, I am, you know. So but that's just me, and I understand why you guys really dig it. But I definitely recommend the first part. I'll check out the third part because I got the book. I got it on my car, so and I'll definitely do that. But yeah, so that's sort of where I landed with it. And But I don't hold it against you for recommending it at all. I thought the short story was great. Like I thought, that, like I said, that first part was is really interesting. I definitely would recommend.
And is this the one that was free? Right, it was free on Audible, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. So just for everybody to know, like free book on Audible. Yeah. Just listen to the first part. It's a Hugo and Nebula award winning novella on its own. It's great. And then if you like it, keep going. Now I will say I'm the only person that read this. Right, you guys all listened to it. I tried listening for like 10 seconds and didn't like the narrator. So, there's always that coloring of experience, right, by, like, who's reading and the tone and all that. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what'd you think?
I liked it. However, I agree. I wonder how important the middle piece was, part of the book two. And I didn't quite finish this book either. Mm-hmm. So, but I did start the third book because I wanted to know, well, where's this going then? How is there a whole other book here? When we just read a book about a court scene, which was basically a conspiracy, and I just need to ask you, is that conspiracy very important to the third book?
You mean the third part?
Of this book?
And fourth, actually. There's a fourth book to it.
Right.
Like all in the same book. Fourth part.
There is a fourth part.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, I've forgotten. Yeah. By the way, just for everyone, like all the books that people have been talking about, that's not the second and third like book, the sequel. We're talking about parts of book one.
But they are called book one.
They're called
book one to four,
one, two to four. Yeah.
Okay. So three is where I went into three. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed what I heard, and then I don't know.
I think it's necessary to paint a social commentary on what's happening with the sleepless.
And the divide.
Yeah, and the divide, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So you guys, a lot of what I would say, you guys have already said. I thought it was a very well written book. The first book was like when I started listening to this, and I listened to this, I loved it right away. I was like, oh, this is great. I want to hear about how one parent wants their child to be sleepless, one maybe doesn't, and like the social issues that happen. But I've been personally wanting a certain kind of book, and I've just been grabbing what I can with the other stuff I've been reading. So I maybe it's just timing as well. However, I would recommend this book in almost a speculative fiction way, that I would recommend an Atwood or Stevenson in a way, less detailed in some ways than Stevenson, but something about it just is there. But I would also say that you guys did mention spaceship. So now
space station.
So now I'm a little bit like, okay, what? That sounds science fiction like, and the book itself sounded more like speculative fiction. Mm-hmm. So if this is book four, where we have a
So it ends with like I think it has a very strong ending. I kind of forgot that the second book is a bit of a intellectual pointy headed exercise, but like part of the reason this is a great book, like as a book, not just the novella, the ending is strong. Like they come up with the super sleepless. So basically the sleepless, right, they're kind of hated and there's a bifurcation of society. They have to be safe for their own safety. They go to a space colony, space orbital station. But then they engineer their own super sleepless. Okay, so now it's like the beauty of this whole book is like the elites make their own elites. And they get out-elited by their own elites, and treated the way that they were treating the normal people, right? And so it's a great sort of symmetrical commentary on the consequences of elitism, I guess, right? Like, if you have a biological advantage, and sleeplessness, I think, is quite elegant, right? It's like a nice example of, like, something, single thing that would just clearly give your progeny an advantage over their peers, right? It just gives you more time. It's almost like having slow down time ability or something, right? So you can get more done in a day. I thought that was a really good way to just frame the whole thing. And then she just keeps exploring like further and further things. Like the second actual book, like the sequel, Beggars and Choosers, right? Just, it gets weirder and weirder. Like she just keeps evolving this, right? Like it's always different again, and it's a whole different set of characters, and it's like another generation later, and there's like a fourth split. And then like, it's not just that the elite get more elite, but the non-elite get less elite too, right? She portrays this interesting evolutionary prospect, not only where the advantaged get more advantaged, but the disadvantaged actually get more disadvantaged. Hey, sounds like the modern world, right?
But does that break any ground that wasn't already done in the short story?
Like, no, is there anything she just does there? Well, yeah, I think, I mean, it looks very different.
Yeah.
She really does go on to like a whole different like society and different kinds of people.
And she throws a lot of ideas in there, like there's a character, Drew, who is, he helps people lucid dream.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And mm-hmm. and when I was reading that, I was thinking of you, Marty. I was like, this is why I like
He becomes the main character in the second and the sequel.
Yeah.
The book.
Yeah. And then there's like bioweapons, right? And then there's political intrigue between the orbital that's orbiting around the Earth and the United States, and it's a it gets exciting.
Well, the more you guys talk about this, the more I feel like that event that I missed that I wish I'd went to, or that lecture that's like, oh no, it was, oh, I should have gone to
Are you getting FOMO?
A little bit because, well, the thing is, there wasn't much of an adventure until, and what you guys are describing is a little more like, okay, well, I do want to know about an orbiting space station. I do want to know about another level of super intelligence that I like that juxtaposition of just the flip, and now we got the sleepless that are on the bottom.
It is analogous actually to our super intelligence that we talk a lot about with AGI, artificial general intelligence. Here it's been done with gene altering. So we have humans who are these basically super intelligences, and what are the implications of that for society? And she explores that. She explores that biologically, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
More very 90s.
And I have to tell you a little more about the second book because, okay, so there's something that's totally not in the first one at all, in the sequel.
This is the sequel book.
The sequel book, right. Yeah, like, or maybe even the third one. So she moves on to this, like, stage in evolution after, you know, a few hundred years of this, or 100 years, where the super sleepless and the sleepless, they're all out in space. Okay, on Earth, the whole society has simply evolved at, like, 80 or 90% of everyone lives for free. They just have everything provided for them. There's food, there's entertainment, there's bread and circuses, baby.
The livers.
The livers. The livers. They live. They get to spend their time living, not like working like a dick, right?
The workers are called the donkeys.
And the workers are called the donkeys, exactly, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, they're just considered mules, like work mules. But it turns out, you know, the mules, they're genetically altered not to be sleepless, but at least enough to be extra smart, extra fast, to be good enough to compete among the rulers of the world. And so they're really the rulers of the world, okay? But the livers, the people who live for free, they're fucking dumb, right? They're basically illiterate mass slobs who just get paid for their votes, okay? So they vote, and they're like, oh, well, I voted for this guy, so I deserve everything to be given to me for free. I mean, come on. And she does a great job of, like, portraying sort of the devolution of a democratic society towards, I mean, it's kind of like that, right? You're just paid for your vote, and they give you everything you want if you pay for the right guy. But they're not actually in control, but they think they are, right? They think that they're living it up. They're the rulers and royalty of the world because they don't have to work, but totally inconsequential. And then you can imagine where that goes, right? If you have a totally inconsequential large proportion of your society, well, at some point, the rulers are going to figure out that you're expendable. So, you know, she does, it does keep growing, right? She does kind of like keep pushing this envelope.
All right, so.
Get it. What's next? I think it's you, Sam.
It is me. All right, so next book of the month.
Well, I'm excited.
All right. So, at the time of this recording, it is March 31st, and in celebration of Transvisibility Day, we're going to be reading Rika Aoki's Light from Uncommon Stars.
Ooh, yeah.
I've heard of this.
This is a truly original, genre-expanding sci-fi novel that fearlessly ventures into the religious, complete with a cursed violin, a Faustian bargain. Add in a transgender runaway, a queer alien courtship over really good donuts, and you have a lovely example of how far sci-fi has come and the cool places it can go. So this was nominated for a Hugo Award in 2022 for Best Novel, and the Locus Award for Best Fantasy Novel, and was named a Kirkus Best Book of 2021, and was the 2022 Alex Award winner and also was made the New York Public Library top 10 list of 2021. So lots of accolades with this. So this is a pretty special book.
I'm sold.
And it's got a little bit of everything and is unlike anything I think we've read to date on this show. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to discussing it next month.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah.
That Kevin, was great. Kevin, do you remember? So Kevin mentioned earlier we were at Toronto Comic Con, and one of our audience members recommended this book.
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah. Yep. And I remember saying, I can't believe I haven't read this yet. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to read it, and here's the opportunity, Sam. Thank you.
And on side note, Miranda has been recommending me this book for months to a year. She loves this book and said, this is sci-fi. You should read this. Mm-hmm. So
oh, and
she
on loves this book. Amazon that it is recommended directly next and with Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. Mm-hmm. So Becky is this a very Becky Chambers-ish kind of genre?
It does have that feel to it. In the sense that where Becky Chambers is happy to explore different ways to live and different ways to recognize that and normalize that, different lifestyles and different ways to be. This book covers that as well, but in a way that involves this sort of these fantastical elements as well. And there's some classic sci-fi elements. There are there's a little bit of everything, and it all kind of works. And this is a sort of like fusion restaurant where the menu doesn't look like it should taste good, and it does. So it's a pretty rewarding book. Cool. You know what I mean? Like when you're looking, it's like, oh, I don't know that I would put peanut butter on that, but you do, and then it's awesome. That's what this book is.
That's what I'm all about.
So yeah, and it's just it was unlike anything I've read before. I can't wow. compare it to anything. I can compare elements of it to anything. Like certainly there's certain tropes in there, and there's certain aspects of it that are familiar, but not all together. And so it's a really interesting thing. Yeah, but in terms of Becky Chambers and the comparison there, I think that's fair in that openness, in pushing the reader to expand their idea of what's normal and what's and how other people can live and do live. And it's a beautiful thing. Anyways,
expectations are set high now.
Yeah, I'm happy mm-hmm. to set them high for this one. It's not hard. And it's one of those books that like every book, it has the sort of sloggy parts, but they're short and few. So yeah, anyways, okay. Looking forward to discussing this next month.
Right. Awesome. On.
Thank you very much for listening today. Read along with us on this next book. This is going to be a really fun one. Sam's recommended. So read along if you can. And please, if you like the show, if you're here at the end of the show, subscribe to us, like us, write us a review, let us know what you think. We'd like to hear from you very much.
We really appreciate that, because anytime there's any type of engagement like that, it helps other people find the show, and it helps it grow and helps it expand and helps other authors come on the show and be interested in us.
Yeah, if we know what you want to hear, then it's easier for us to go after that, and we're happy to do that.
So really, if you guys like it, we'd love to know who's listening to us, what you think of it. Tell us what you want to hear more of. If you want more interviews, if you want more books, if you want us to talk about movies and TV show, if that's boring for you, should we like only to ever talk about books, or is that too nerdy? Really, we could use some feedback now. We've been doing this a while.
And you can do that on Facebook. Tales from the Bridge Facebook. I guess you're just going to find us if you do that, right?
Yeah, we're on Instagram as well, and you can find us there.
We're not too active there, but obviously we'll get the messages. We'll see what's going on.
Yeah, I check it.
And on Apple Podcasts, right? That's the one that takes commentary, and like we're on Apple, so if you're listening to us on that, we're on
reviews.
Spotify, and we're on
Twitter as well, at Bridge Tales.
Audible as well, you can get us, but you can't leave comments everywhere, so some of those you can leave a comment. Please do.
Or just email us.
Or find our website, and there's an email there.
Yeah.
Track us down and bang down our door.
That's right.
But Marty's door. Just Marty's.
Just Marty's.
Overall, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed this episode and more to come. Read along with the next book. We got more authors and more fun stuff coming your way.